Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. You must listen to the open loops, a theme park for absurd beliefs and systems of integration between the mind and the creative spirit. Open loops. Today on Open Loops, we have one of my favorite people I've interviewed on the show. The third time's a charm, we have Stephanie Bingham, the Miss Frizzle of Fear. Yes, the scariest insight that you can possibly have about all things spirits, all things demonic, ghosts, ghouls, psychics. She's a historian, she's an academic, she's a psychic herself, she's also a vampire, and she's doing projects left and right. I mean, I'm so lucky that I can even catch her with this schedule. But we're going to be delving into the realm of possessed objects tonight. Possessed dolls, I hope, a little bit, as well as toys and all kinds of things. I mean, I know we've talked about the Ouija board with her before, but I'm sure that there's a whole realm here. I really want to focus on these inanimate objects and stories of possession here, because, I mean, I don't know about you, Stephanie. Well, first of all, thank you again for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. I asked this question to the public, and I'd never heard anything before, but it makes sense. Why isn't there a haunted Barbie story? Is there?
I haven't heard directly of a haunted Barbie doll story, but there are plenty of haunted doll stories. A lot of the sort of thought about how a spirit becomes naturally attached to an item is that they either had a strong emotional connection to it when they were alive, or there is some sort of metal or glass or substance on the doll that is easy for them being the spirit, to sort of attach to. And I think you have sort of a twofold reason as why you don't hear about so many Barbies. The sort of apex of that sort of haunted doll, that sort of Victorian era doll haunting kind of situation you have. And at that time, you had a much higher infant mortality rate. So you had a lot more children dying, and you had dolls made out of objects and materials that were easier for entities to attach to.
That's interesting. It's kind of true. I mean, all these dolls, they do have a similar, at least in the movies, they all really do have that similar look to them. Do you know, I mean, I'm curious from your experience or in research, is there an instance of a first doll or toy haunting that goes way back? I mean, what have you found?
If you're looking at dolls as sort of a broad term for any sort of humanoid sculpture, if you go back to ancient Egypt, you have reports of hungry ghosts and of connections to Ushabti and things like that, that are spirit beings that will help the person when they cross over. So you have these sort of ideas of attaching human souls to human looking objects going back to at least ancient times. But I think the sort of popular idea of haunted dolls really took off in sort of modern times with Annabelle. And Annabelle being the doll that doesn't look like what you would expect a haunted doll to look like. She's a Raggedy Ann doll. Like, that one
Yes.
is the one that's the wild card all the way around.
Yeah, you know what? For people that aren't familiar, I mean, obviously there's been a movie and it's alluded to in the Conjuring series as well. What is the full story? Why is Annabelle such a wild tale?
Annabelle is such a wild tale because she came into the possession of Ed and Lorraine Warren, who were very good at sort of publicizing what happened and sort of documenting the experiences. But she was given as a gift to a, I believe, college student who was a nursing student. And they started noticing things moving, like the doll herself would move. And there were scratches found on the student that they attributed to the doll. It just got really freaked out by this doll. It became in the hands of Ed and Lorraine Warren. And at that point, you get this whole scenario of her being thought to have a demonic attachment to her. And they put her in this case specifically to try and hold that entity in and keep everyone safe from it. And she's one of the entities that you're not supposed to interact with or make fun of to their face. And there's a couple of dolls like that, Robert the doll being the other one popping to mind. But there was a story of a gentleman who made fun of Annabelle and then got on his motorcycle and died. And that death is directly attributed to Annabelle. So she is one of the few that has that direct sort of connection to not only physical bodily harm, but death.
Whoa, why is she haunted? What is her issue?
Nobody has a good theory as to why Annabelle is haunted. There's a bunch of like ideas floating around, but the consensus seems to be that she is not haunted in the traditional sense. Like, there is not a human spirit attached to Annabelle. Pretty much everyone thinks there's at the very least a malevolent spirit, if not a fully demonic entity attached to this doll.
What in the world? Would you ever keep an Annabelle in your house?
Like the actual Annabelle doll? Yeah, I probably would. That. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, this is going to get back to that. My concern about your mental well-being, as it usually does. No, but I mean, are you okay with having these haunted things around you?
I have a set of marbles that has a little boy attached to them, sitting on my bookshelf right now. I live with haunted objects, and I've lived with inhuman spirits since I was a very young child. So that is not anything out of the ordinary for me. I've always felt that with every entity I've encountered, if you know how to interact with them and you do it in a respectful manner, you don't have any problems with them. So,
you know, I was wondering about this. Does Stephanie Bingham get scared of things?
Sure. I am as jumpy as any other person when you hear something that you're not expecting or something jumps out at you. Absolutely. But I have seen a lot of very strange things. And just because I startle doesn't mean that I'm actually afraid of the entity that's causing it. You know what I mean?
That's so interesting.
Very few paranormal experiences I had that have caused me actual what I would call fear.
Yeah. Do you remember a time when you ever were afraid of a ghoul or anything like that?
Absolutely. It was a really weird scenario that happened in high school. I was up late one night. I was reading a book, and I have a ghost that will come to me at night, always has, and it'll sit on the edge of my bed and it'll sort of like talk to me, you know, very benign, very human entity. So something sat down on the side of my bed and I thought it was him. And I was being a petulant teenager and was like, go away. I don't want to deal with you tonight. And I felt the bed sort of move and something laid down next to me and wrapped its arm around me.
Oh, God.
I lost my shit. Like, I jumped out of that bed so quick and I went and sat in the bathtub because I could not feel it if it sat down on the edge of the bathtub. I had to remove myself from the area because I was so freaked out by that instance.
That's interesting. You know, that makes me think, that there have been times, or at least, you know what's weird? It's coming to me right now. I'm having distant memories of moments in it, and it could either be in a hypnagogic state, or it could actually be when I'm not, of feeling something push me, but then knowing that there's nothing there, and then the phenomenon fades away. I mean, I don't consider it a recurring theme in the way that it happens to you, but I'm curious. I mean, is this a common phenomenon? Just things that'll bump you once in a while, let you know, hey, we're here.
It's one of the most common things that I hear about from people who have haunted houses specifically. If you're living with an entity, oftentimes that little brush, that gentle motion, even if they're trying to make it harder, generally doesn't come across that way, is an easy way for an entity to let you know that they are there too. So it's pretty common.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay, so we have Annabelle, who we don't really understand why she's exactly possessed in this way. I mean, obviously Lorraine Warren, she was a medium, and I know that those two did a lot to get rid of the possessed spirits, or at least try to. I mean, was there ever a time where they were able to tame Annabelle? What happened with them trying to get rid of the spirit, but then Annabelle coming back? Was there stuff like that? I'm curious about the dynamic there.
I think that the key with Annabelle is that they decided the safest plan of action with her was to entomb her in this little wooden case with like a glass front on it that has charms and medals and tags on it, and an effort to keep her in. They left her in their haunted museum where she would be away from people, where she would be contained. And I have to think about the times that I have had to remove specifically inhuman spirits from people or objects or locations. Oftentimes the easiest way to go about that is to remove what they are attached to and place it somewhere no one else is going to be harmed by them. Because removing something that is truly inhuman is a lot more work than removing something that is or was human.
Oh, interesting. Explain that more.
Which part?
why are the rules different for removing things?
Yes. So think about it like this. If it was human, if it was alive at some point in time, running a skin suit, it was in this world. It understands how things here work. It had a culture that it believed in. It had a life. It had family. It had friends. It had all of these emotions that we understand. They can be reasoned with in a way that something else can't. Think of an inhuman, if you will, as a semi-dangerous wild animal, a tiger or something. You can understand what they do. You can manipulate them to some extent, but you're never going to be able to reason with one the same way you can reason with something that has the same baseline experiences that you do.
Oh, that is interesting. That is very interesting. I almost feel that it is, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of why people talk about how sociopaths and narcissists and psychopaths are kind of speaking a different thing than what you can do with traditional Western medicine or something. There's almost a different plane, and there's a different entire reasoning. And then I've heard people say that sometimes, you know, like a narcissist has a demonic non-human spirit inside of them. Or, you know, I mean, these are metaphors, obviously, but it is curious that people use that metaphor in terms of describing that when you're talking about this.
Absolutely. And I think that's a good way of thinking about it. But just from dealing with them personally, it is so much actual work, and it would take time and dedication to remove something truly inhuman. Whereas if you have other things you have to do, sometimes the easier option is just to bind them and tomb them and get them out of the way.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So we're talking that this doll caused death, but you also said it moved as well.
That's a very common thing with a lot of haunted dolls of every level. Almost the most common thing you're going to find about them is that they're moving, they're blinking, they're watching you. I was at a haunted house working on one of the shows, actually, and there was a doll there that was haunted that every time you walked in that room, that doll had moved every single time. She was great. Nice little normal human spirit, but the doll moved. But Annabelle was known to move great distances. Not as much as, say, Robert the doll, because he moved through the house. But yeah, it's beyond like just they were sitting sit up and then they fell over. It's like they were sitting here and now they're at the kitchen table. That sort of movement you're talking about with like Annabelle and Robert.
Yeah. What is the story of Robert the Doll?
Robert the doll is older than Annabelle, and if you ask me, a whole lot creepier. He was actually, according to the story, made by a servant or an enslaved person for the son of a well-to-do family. And it is a doll that was the same height as a child, dressed as the child, had a stuffed animal of the child's dog. Essentially, a giant poppet is really what it kind of looks like. And the son, Robert, became obsessed with this doll, would blame the doll for things. People would hear the little boy talking to someone and hear a voice answer back when it was just him and Robert in the room. They would
What?
lock Robert in the attic when the boy was out of the house, and the doll would end up at the kitchen table before the little boy got back. And this stayed with Robert throughout his entire life. When he married, he was an artist. And when he married, the doll was there, like, and creeping out his wife. Like, this was a long-standing thing. And no one could ever truly sever Robert from the doll, Robert. And they had this weird, sort of almost codependent relationship. And then after he died, they left the doll sitting in a sort of turret. And people would see the doll moving from window to window in said turret. And then eventually he was put on display at a museum in Key West, where you should always ask to take pictures of Robert before you do, because if you don't, bad things will happen to you or your camera, depending on his mood.
Wait, what would happen? Okay. Look, there's a lot here. First of all, I want to know how he creeped out the wife. I mean, first of all, why is this wife marrying a man codependent on a doll? That is a big question I have. I mean, I don't understand. I mean, I guess now people are talking about how, we're in the era of dudes that have artificially intelligent girlfriends, and I feel like if a woman ever found out that, you were there for a while, they'd be like, oh, okay, I don't know about that. But then there's this
Yeah.
guy with a doll obsession, so that makes me question her. But I mean, what happened there?
So you're looking at sort of turn of the century Edwardian era. So she didn't have a lot of options. I don't think she was thrilled with the idea, but the doll, she would lock it upstairs. She chained it in a box at one point, and they heard the box moving across the attic. Like, the doll is haunted. Like, there's no way of getting around this. And it became to the point where they could not keep the doll put away, so they just had to let it be out with the family and sort of treated as a family member. It's a fascinating psychological sort of study about him and his obsession with Robert, but also
Yeah.
paranormally to look at what this doll was able to do over such a long period of time.
My gosh, I'm trying to imagine Stephanie, if you in an era of look, if somebody ever decides, even if you have someone decides to move in with you, are they going to be like, Stephanie, we need to lock this stuff in the attic? I mean, how will they survive? What do you think? Can they? Yeah. I mean,
That's fair. That's fair. Well, to be fair, the things that I live with follow a set of rules, and if they don't, they get kicked out. So, everything here is willing to play by the rules and play nice. So, I wouldn't think that anything here would need to be locked up. There are certain items that I have come into contact with. I have what is said to be a cursed deck of tarot cards
Oh,
that
interesting.
was messing up a bookstore that they just basically gave to me to get it out of the house or get it out of the bookstore. And that does stay in a metal case with salt because it is not the energy you want, but it's not intelligence. So it's sort of a different thing, but there's ways around pretty much any haunting.
Tell me this. What is okay, well, actually, I'll ask you this after. I want to know. Let's go back to Robert the doll for a second. What happens when people do not ask permission and take pictures?
Most often, their cameras malfunction. Those pictures alone do not work, or the camera is left completely inoperable, and that includes your cell phone. So they've had lots of people like come out with bricks that are no longer functioning cell phones after taking a picture of Robert without asking.
Ooh.
Real bad in this day and age.
And so the haunting, the spirit is still in that thing.
Yes. And a lot of the people that go to or work at the museum talk about the doll moving. They will oftentimes leave little treats like candy inside the case with Robert as like a treat for him, and they will disappear. So,
Oh, what? Okay. This is all kind of mind-blowing. Look, the question I had for you next is, what do you think is the most haunted inanimate object in your possession?
most haunted inanimate object, directly inanimate object would probably be the marbles.
Yeah, what is the
Those
story
are.
with those?
I really wish I had a better one. I was at a like a junk shop, and there were these marbles in this little tiny old-fashioned milk jug. And you see them and you're like, yeah, that's just what it is. And I heard a little voice sort of talking, and I turn around, there's this little boy, probably 2 or 3, like little child, just kind of sitting there toying with them, clearly not alive. I left it there because I have no desire to have haunted marbles. But I go home and I have a dream about this little boy, and he's basically telling me that those were his, and he's sad and he's lonely and all these sort of things. So I went back and I got them and I brought them back here so that he would feel a little less isolated to some extent. He goes by either Billy or Willie, depending on, he talks with his fingers in his mouth a lot. It's very hard for me to understand, but I think he died of some form of fever, scarlet or typhoid, probably.
Oh my gosh. Now what makes it so haunted?
He was little enough that they, he was little enough and he was poor enough that they were his only true possession. They were his prize. They were the one thing that he had that was his that he could play with. So he is just very attached to them because they were that object for him when he was alive.
That's intriguing. So you, I mean, do the marbles do weird things to you, or do they?
You will be sitting on the couch and hear them moving inside their little milk jug,
Oh my
but other
gosh.
than that, not really. Like they, it's a very benign haunting, and it's very sort of warm and fuzzy. Like all he wanted was some place where he didn't feel alone, that he could play with his toy. That's all he wants.
That's interesting. Yeah, you know what's I now that I'm thinking about this, I'm trying to think about haunting and what it even means, because I definitely think there is, in pop culture at least, a trope that it's you're sitting there and then they show their presence and often induce fear and then pull back. But what do you think, in your opinion, how would you define haunting?
A haunting is any manifestation of a soul that no longer has a body. To me, it can be good, it can be bad, it can be anywhere in between. It is just them making themselves known to people who are still around.
Yeah. Is it ever in your experience completely benevolent?
I think the little boy is like a child. There's no malice there. like that little one, he doesn't have it, but I've had plenty of other encounters with objects that had attachments that are certainly truly malevolent. So I think they're like people. It varies.
Yeah. What is the deal? Look, I don't understand, because I feel that. What is your story in the sense of, and I don't know if I've ever asked you this before, but have you ever thought why was there a past life? Were you pissed off someone? I mean, why are these malevolent spirits? And look, yes, you discipline them, you tell them to behave and stuff, but why do you have to set so many boundaries with dark forces, Stephanie?
Well, a past life would hit it right on the head. I've been dealing with things that aren't in bodies for a very long time, no matter how you cut it, from my belief and just how I function. But it is something that I am equipped to do. It is something that doesn't bother me to set those boundaries, and it's something that I'm very comfortable doing. And it skews with me because I do get called out when ghost hunting groups or people end up with objects or locations that they think are demonically, almost always are going to say I've got a demon, haunted, and they'll call me out to deal with it, because there are so many psychics who are so very good at dealing with human spirits and so very few that are willing to deal with things that are inhuman, and even fewer still that are willing to deal with them as anything other than a demon and giving a house a blessing or giving a person a blessing. So mine skews up because I do make myself available in situations that most psychics do not.
Yeah. I mean, that is, well, you know what, in a way, you're that's so sweet of you to make yourself available.
Someone has to do it. May as well be me.
Yeah, my gosh. Now, I never realized how much of a, philanthropist you are in some ways. that's intriguing. Okay, so you've got these marbles. They're pretty haunted. I mean, what are some other, I think last time we talked about magic eight balls being haunted and whatnot, actually, which you said you'd never heard of before. Actually, did you say there was a haunted magic eight ball?
I have never heard of a haunted magic eight ball, but I don't know why, because that'd be a perfect like divination tool. Like, why don't we use those on ghost hunts? Like, I feel like they would work.
Yes. It is a good question. It's a very good question. I mean, obviously, we've talked about Ouija boards a lot, so I don't necessarily want to go into that realm again, but I am curious. Well, let me go this route. Are there any other, because marbles can be part of games, are there any other in history experiences of like chess boards or checker? Anything in that realm, chutes and ladders, anything else that might be haunted that you've ever heard of?
Toy-wise, I have heard of chess boards and checkers both being signs of hauntings, where people would actually play the game with a spirit. They'll move that night when they wake up, the other side has moved. So that I have seen, or rather heard of, as a pretty benign, like a lot of people in that situation, you know, oh, it's my grandfather, we always used to play chess, so we still play chess, that sort of situation. But more modern games, I have not heard a lot of direct evidence there, or people having that phenomena with like a chutes and ladders or a connect four, something like that.
That would be pretty cool.
It'd be very odd.
Yeah, I mean, that is interesting. It's making me wonder about this notion of what happens if there is a haunted toy. You never hear of a haunted toy store, do you?
Sure you do.
Have you? Tell me.
I have heard of a haunted toy store. I've heard of one haunted toy store. It was out west. And there was having a hard time retaining their nighttime security guards, because the dolls, like, you know, the baby dolls that are sitting in like the boxes.
Yes.
With the movable heads, the heads would all be facing different directions. They had a hard time keeping their security guards because of that.
What?
So, I mean, that's think wild. About it. If you are a child spirit, especially if you're like that sort of 9 to 10 year old child spirit, and you can choose somewhere to be. You choose a toy store. You have a person here, an adult you could scare by doing something super simple. Like, that one always made a lot of sense to me. Like, that particular haunting.
Yeah. How much would someone have to pay to get you to do a ghost tour? I feel like it should be an exorbitant amount.
I've actually led a bunch of ghost tours generally for charity.
Wow. Yeah, this philanthropy theory, I'm telling you, this woman just wants to be, show everybody how good she is. No, I mean, Stephanie, I mean, that's pretty cool that you do that. Because I was going to say, I mean, I don't know, I never used to do ghost tours. And in the past year, I've gone on, oh my gosh, I don't know why this happened, but I went on three in three different locations, Scotland, New Orleans, and the West Village in New York City.
Ooh.
And there's some great stuff. I mean, some really good things. But, you know, sometimes... I think it all comes down to the ability to really give you the full narrative, to be able to actually, the way a tour guide takes you through the tale of something happened.
Absolutely.
And not overplaying it. As a matter of fact, I would say the best tour, and I feel like this is why you'd be good at it, is it was just so matter of fact. It was just like,
that is
here's
a
what
distinct
happened.
Way of doing it. Yes, absolutely.
Yes, like everybody, this person just calmly told the tale, very matter of fact, and we all freaked out. And involved this, I don't know if you know the story, but there's a tower, I think attached to a bank now, that used to be a library in the village. And, you know, there was a woman on top and she was waving and the little girl kept seeing it, but the mom didn't see her. And then all of a sudden one day, this woman fell to the ground and it turned out to actually be the daughter. Like, and the mom saw her jump. Like, it was, oh my gosh.
That's
horrifying.
A great twist.
Yes. I mean, are there, okay, tell me this. Are there any...
Yes.
Haunted toy stories, that the real life ones that have twists like this that you can share?
Not that have twists like that. Most of the haunted toys are pretty straightforward. I mean, you're going to find the more modern haunted toys are going to be the electronics that turn on with no batteries and start making their childish noises. So yeah, nothing
did you
with
do
twist that good.
Wait, okay, so we need to develop this plot. So Annabelle, I mean, I guess that's kind of true. I mean, people will talk about Annabelle and they say, yeah, they really did kind of twist that story a lot for Hollywood. They adapted it, they added a lot of layers on, but it's not, I mean, it is a lot more straightforward than the way those movies depict it, isn't that right?
To an extent, yeah. I think anything that goes to Hollywood is going to be made bigger and scarier just to try and hold an audience, because everyone's looking for the newest, the best. You know what I mean? So everything has to be to an extreme.
Yeah. What would you say is there a Hollywood movie that you think really stayed true to the entire haunting and spirit experience that got it right and got it scary?
I think the one that always made the most sense to me, and it's not based off of an entirely true occurrence, but The Sixth Sense.
Oh.
Being the little kid that could see things.
Yeah.
I understood that little boy. Like that, and that one was a creepy show the first time you watch it. But beyond that, when you're dealing with true hauntings, so much gets changed to make them bigger and bolder and scarier that the true fear that comes from the subtle nuances of living with things you don't understand sort of get lost in the shuffle.
Totally. Oh my gosh. So wait a minute. So electronics that don't have batteries in it that start up. What's an instance of this?
Pick your child's toy. A lot of times, like the dinosaurs that walk or have the light up eyes that make noise, trains, toy cars. I had a radio that did it. But yeah, they will turn on with no batteries in them. And nothing is quite as creepy as having this thing go off in the middle of the night, walking over to it to take the batteries out to stop it from malfunctioning, opening up that compartment, and realizing that there's nothing there for you to take out.
Oh my gosh, what? That is super weird. I mean, I don't even know. It would be
Yeah.
interesting to see if there's like any footage of that somewhere, or did anybody capture that in the archives?
There's lots of videos of that, but I know when it happened to me, my first instinct was to take the item and throw it down the garbage chute. Like I was not playing with that one.
Yeah. What is the what makes you hold on to a haunted thing versus let go? Is it just the feeling?
It's the energy of what's coming off of the object and the chances that that object could harm someone else. Like with what happened in college with the beads, those had to be removed from all people. But like the marbles, those were safe to keep because it is a different sort of entity.
Oh, interesting. You know, there are a lot of YouTube videos about haunted toys that are caught on camera. I mean, is there any, look, you do these shows and you even I know you have some projects coming up. In your experience, is there, have you looked at any of these videos and said, oh yeah, no, this is for sure. This is not fake. This could happen. This is reasonable. What is your experience with that?
I've seen several of the videos that ring very true to me, especially when it's a child, like the child looking where you would think the ghost is interacting with something that nobody else knows is there. I find those to be very compelling. But there's one that I saw that had a tricycle in it, and it was like a father and like a toddlery size baby playing near this tricycle. And out of nowhere, this tricycle just flips and then rolls towards the child.
Oh
And that
my
one,
gosh.
yeah, that's one of the ones that you see it and that hair on the back of your neck goes up. Like when you're at an investigation and something's manifesting. So that one always felt very true to me.
Oh my gosh, we gotta find that. Yeah, that I definitely want to check that
It's a
out.
weird one.
Yeah, there is a I didn't even know about this. There's a whole world of haunted eBay
Oh,
items.
yeah.
Yeah, have you ever gone down
Absolutely.
that rabbit hole?
I have, yeah. Actually, for one of the shows that we're doing, we ended up just buying a haunted doll because she's haunted and she needs to come play with us. But that's a very big thing. Like, if you can say that an object, a doll, a box, whatever it happens to be, is haunted, even up to a house, for the right crowd, that is a massive selling point.
Oh my gosh, the right crowd. The
Yeah.
Stephanie Binghams of the world. Yeah, I guess that is
Absolutely.
true. I mean, you know what though? That's the funny thing. There are people that are it is I mean, typically the way it's depicted, it's that, you know, you don't want to get near a supernatural or paranormal doll. And yet I wonder about this phenomenon of people that are just drawn to this. I mean, in everyday life, I do it all the time when people talk about this. I talk about this podcast and people that go, oh yeah, I've seen things. And it's not that they go, oh gosh, I've seen things and I can't talk about it. Oftentimes there's an intrigue to it. I mean, what do you overall philosophically, I guess let me go broader here, tap into your academic mind. There is the paranormal sometimes even less about fear and more of just a invitation for us to explore in general. What is your take?
I think so. I think it is the unknown and it's a controllable unknown because pretty much any spirit you're going to run into, 9 times out of 10, it's going to be a human spirit. It's not going to have a lot of physical, actual danger to the person. So it is a controllable oddity that you have access to. But it's also the idea in a lot of cases that you have this connection to something that proves to you in this modern mechanical scientific world that there is something more that science can't explain or hasn't explained yet. And there is some truth or some proof that there is something to come after.
Yes, yes. Very interesting. Oh my gosh. Okay. What other strange and possessed objects come to mind that you love talking about?
Strange and possessed objects. I mean, the one that I always go to for myself is the entity that was sent to me on a string of beads. That one was a truly malevolent haunting. But I always like, in a more broad sense, the ones at museums that people don't realize are haunted. I worked in museums for years, and sort of very topically, one of the exhibits that came through one of my museums was a Titanic exhibit. And I cannot tell you the number of times I was called or messaged in the middle of the night by security being like, something is moving. We hear music. Just all of these things that were causing such fear by such little actions on the part of the entities.
That is strange. That is very strange. Wow. Interesting. Now, do you, in a situation like that, I mean, do you alert the curators? Do you just keep that to yourself? I mean, what do you do?
It's sort of a known thing in most, especially history museums or art museums, that strange things are going to go on. As long as the objects aren't being damaged and it doesn't set off the alarms, everyone is generally pretty cool with it.
Oh my gosh, what are the most haunted things in the Smithsonian? That's what I wonder.
Oh, Smithsonian's so big. Let's see,
there are a lot of museums too. I mean,
I would say that the most haunted object that I can place isn't haunted in the traditional sense, not with, it's more of an egregore than anything else, but the Hope Diamond.
What? What's so weird? I mean, first of all, explain what an egregore is, whatever that word is. Explain
an egregore. It's a thought form. It's the sort of like what Slender Man has become. It started off as something that was a story, but so many people have bought into it and so many people have believed in this that now people are legitimately reporting sightings of what appears to be a Slender Man. It's putting all of that energy towards a single thought, a single idea. And so around the Hope Diamond, that thought is this curse and this sort of great darkness that hangs around this exquisite gemstone. And I think that that is very, very easily felt when you are in the presence of that diamond. And I don't think it was attached to it originally. I believe that it is because it has been on exhibit for so long and it has so long been known as this cursed object that you get this energy and this darkness and things like that happening around it.
That's intriguing. So you're telling me that we have the power to create a dark force that an object takes on?
Yeah, absolutely.
What in the world? Why are we so able to do that? I mean, I feel like this is human potential gone wrong. This is, you know, I mean, they talk about positive prayer and bringing people
exactly.
back to life.
Or manifestation.
Yes.
I think it's really sort of the same idea as your positive manifestations and things like that. But my sort of view of the world comes down to energy. It always has. And when you place your concentration or you fixate on something, you are giving your energy to whatever that thing is, be it your emotions, your jobs, your family. So when people, especially large groups of people, even if you're just giving a little bit to a single item like the diamond, it builds up very, very quickly.
That's very intriguing. So in your opinion, this thing has, well, okay, have people, I mean, are there reports of the diamond causing things after people went to visit, you know, sickness or anything like that that you can place? Or is this just more of your intuition? I mean, where are you gleaning this from?
So the Hope Diamond story became public long before it became a public viewable item. The Diamond story of tragedy started well before that and was heavily covered in newspapers for pretty much its entire journey in the US. There are a ton of deaths associated with the diamond, wearers of the diamond dying, people who are the children of owners of the diamond dying. All sorts of people have all of these deaths attached near and around the diamond that were all blamed on it for years in the newspapers until it was brought off public, like where people did no longer handle it. No one officially owns the diamond. It is owned by the museum. And at that point is when the deaths associated with the diamond seem to stop.
Wow, that's intriguing. I mean, it is. Did that happen with King Tut too?
Yes, it absolutely did. That's what I was just thinking.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I mean, are we is there something to the museum world? Do museums have power? Yeah. And yeah. I mean, even with Annabelle too, we're talking about putting it on display in some. I mean, what is, you know, I mean, does Indiana Jones have a point here?
Yes.
Beyond just, you know, we shouldn't have this out of the public or in individual possession. It's there's some things that have to be publicly displayed in order to stop the spirits.
I think that that is a very astute observation, because I've seen lots of items in museums that cause trouble when they are in storage, but once they are put out on the floor, all of that seems to stop, especially items that belong to individuals and they end up with that entity, then interacting with the energies of people around them and suddenly feeling more calm, for lack of a better word. But yeah, that's, you've never been anywhere quite as creepy as the archive area of a museum. I've been in a bunch of them. They are filled with this strange energy, and it's a museum, so there's strange smells and just odd objects. Even when you're in an art museum, there's something about it that always makes you feel like something is watching you.
Oh boy, that's interesting. That's very interesting. It also makes me wonder about, are there things that, well, I don't know. I mean, I'm in this kind of Indiana Jones kick right now in general. I'm wondering if there are things where people have, you know, in the archive somewhere, there's a haunted object that is so possessed, so cursed that they're never bringing it out, and the few times that people have interacted with it, it is just, it always, like, they're trying to bury it away. I mean, I guess Annabelle is a good example of this, but are there other maybe non-doll things you can think of that are in the case like this? Does the Vatican archive have something they're like, we can't have this out, this is too demonic? I mean, what do you know about that?
There are lots of objects that would fit that description that you hear about secondhand. And there are lots of statements given by the institutions that are putting up that front that will tell you that all of that is fake. And I've always found it sort of interesting to watch the director of a museum tell you, oh no, we have nothing here that we don't display. We have nothing here. We don't put out that item that causes our security cameras to break every time we put it out. We don't hide that item in storage because of that. We have it in storage because we don't think it tells the story we want it to tell. There's always a sort of professional answer for objects that are giving you trouble that you can't quite place that gives you the excuse to put them aside. But I think people expected to be something like a Hope Diamond or a King Tut's mummy to do something like that. They don't really think about the times that it's a hairpin that belonged to someone that caused these sorts of issues that just become too much work for the museum staff, even if it's not a full sort of deathly haunting, but everything goes wrong. The alarm keeps tripping. And you have these situations where you eventually just have to take it off exhibit because the exhibit doesn't act right when that object is in it.
Yeah, that is weird. Are there, I mean, what are what is there any real life example that comes to mind?
One of the museums that I did work at did have a hairpin that would legitimately cause the camera system. Like anytime it was out in the room, the cameras would not stay on in those rooms. Like that was a thing.
Oh my gosh, that is horrifying. That's horrifying. What about I'm curious about, getting back to dolls. I mean, you ever heard of this Island of the Dolls at all in Mexico
Yes.
City?
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that.
So the Island of the Dolls is this sort of shrine to the little girl who apparently drowned in the waters near said island. And people went there, or there was a caretaker who would hang dolls of every shape, fashion, and form from every available surface. And this island is now just covered in these slowly decaying remnants of every kind of doll you can imagine. And it is one of the eeriest things.
Oh gosh, yeah, I know they talk about whispers and stuff like that.
They do. And it's one of those places where I don't know anyone personally who has been there to get real good hard information on it. But I wonder again if that and the look of the island and people passing it and seeing it have not created something along the lines of an egregore there.
Yeah. Oh gosh, why does egregore sound? I think it's my name just rearranged. That's intriguing. But okay, so tell me this. Would egregore? No, I have no question about egregore. I just wanted to be able to say it. But what I was going to ask you, Stephanie, is this. Is there an of all the haunted objects out there, and I guess. No, let me open it up. Because I know we talked about Annabelle before. And this could be your answer, though I'm curious what you would say besides Annabelle. Is there any haunted object out there that you would, if someone were like, hey, you could have anything you want in your possession, what would it be?
Haunted object wise, it would be the cross that hung over the wing of the St. Louis Catholic infirmary where the exorcism of Roland Doe happened. The exorcist.
Holy moly. Okay, talk about the significance of that.
So that particular haunting, The Exorcist, took place in St. Louis, and the little boy goes by Rolando, and it took place over a very long, very protracted period of time. And at one point, he was placed in this Catholic infirmary hospital sort of situation where they could come in and they could do exorcisms on him every night or every day as necessary. And eventually, they were successful in ridding him of the entity that was forcing itself on him. But ever after that, this wing of the hospital, the entire wing, was just found to be super, super strange. Like they would hear things, they would feel things, and it didn't take long before that particular wing fell out of use. The nurses and the doctors and the priests there didn't want to use it. And it was eventually torn down. And the remaining piece of that is the cross that hung over, like on the top, on the roof of that particular building. And that is in a museum in St. Louis.
And what are you going to do with this thing? Is it just because it's so powerful?
I remember when I was at that museum and saw it, there was something fascinating about it. That energy on that object was very light and very calming almost. It was everything that haunting was not. It's a symbol that no matter what sort of haunting, even if it is a truly demonic haunting, there is a light on the other end of the tunnel.
Yeah. Fascinating. Why? You know what? What is going on? I know the Warren and Lorraine passed a little while back. I mean, what is happening with that museum and all those objects? Do you know?
Last I heard, it was in the possession of John Zaffis, who was their nephew, somehow related to them. And there was some talk of it being reopened to the public for at least part time. But that is the last that I heard of that.
What if you became the curator of all that?
I mean, I have the degrees to do it. I think that would be a fascinating job for anybody who is involved in the paranormal.
Oh my gosh. I think that's your reality show right there. I think we should do a summer of you in this thing, document it, maybe a year. And just to see if there are insights that you can uncover that go beyond maybe what they were doing.
That would absolutely be fascinating. I think people really underestimate what you can do with an object or a location when you have prolonged access to it. And I think, 28 Days Haunted really brought that forward. And I think a lot more people should start exposing themselves to it long-term if they want to truly see what paranormal activity can truly be.
Yes. Whoa. Yeah, what do you think about that? I mean, look, there is a... I mean, I know you were saving people from opening portals up with Ouija boards. This is your backstory. This is the big my college was wild, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is what you did. Okay, so in college you were basically saving the students and probably everybody from these dark entities that would just emerge. But I know there is there are people that, hey, you seem like the type of person that likes hanging out in graveyards. I mean, there are people that entertain just playing around with spirits and whatnot. Now, I've had people on the show that say, look, don't do it. Just avoid it. Get out. It's not something to play with. It's not something, though it sounds like you almost have more of a loose view on that. What is your take? If somebody is paranormally curious, do they need a formal education? What are the signs that they're going to risk getting possessed themselves or something bad happening? I mean, how would you advise someone?
I always advise caution. It's always better to know the history of a location or of an object going in so that you know what you could be dealing with. But also just knowing your paranormal history, knowing what's going on, and just making sure that when you go into a location, that you feel like you are in a stable and even and strong position to do that from. Because I think if you go into a location scared, anxious, angry, you are likely going to get those emotions back in spade. So you need to make sure that you are going into it from the right mindset. I can sit here and say that it is dangerous till I'm blue in the face. If somebody wants to go out and interact with these things, they're going to do it. So they may as well do it in a method that is at least as sane as we can make it, because you're never going to be truly sure that it is a safe interaction. And that is why people want to do it. So I'm not going to tell anyone not to do it, but they need to realize that they are taking a real risk there. Small as it might be, there's always a risk.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. Would you ever, okay, tell me this. Is there a place that is so haunted you won't even go there?
There is a house in Savannah, Georgia, that the haunting inside there was so aggressive that standing on the sidewalk outside, I knew it was not a place that I needed to be.
Wow.
The way that the energy there was manifesting was causing me anxiety before I went to the door. And that is always my sign that it is time for me to take a step back and allow somebody else who is in a better state to go in.
What was so radical about that haunting?
It was aggressive and it was very keyed in. That haunting in particular would pick out a certain person and it would fixate on that person and ignore everything else. And I could almost feel it zeroing in on me as I went towards the location. And that was the issue, was that there was so much energy there and there were so many things happening that I was not in the spot to deal with it properly.
Okay. I do want to ask about this for a second. I know we're kind of going off inanimate objects, to get to hauntings, one of the things I love about the movie Poltergeist is that it's not just a ghost story. I mean, and same with, Amityville and a lot of these legacy haunted houses. I mean, to me, that's the most interesting aspect of a haunted house is that, sometimes people see blood on the walls. Sometimes there's swarms of bugs that come in. Sometimes it's ghosts. I mean, I am curious in your experience and your research, what are some of the odder things besides just, ghosts pushing people around? I mean, I don't think anybody's ever actually reported crawling on a ceiling in that way, but I do think there are some phenomena that aren't just ghosts in haunted house that might be intriguing to learn about.
Absolutely. If you go back to the spiritualist movement, there were actually a ton of reports of levitating objects, especially when doing table tipping and things like that, the actual tables levitating and moving, sometimes to walls. It gets very odd. But when I look at sort of modern hauntings that I have had direct interaction with, I always come back to this one location that had activity at it that I can't understand. Like, I've seen a lot of weird things, but that house was probably the single strangest location that I ever saw or heard of. Very much think water coming out of the walls where there were no pipes, not during rain, just coming out of the wall, scratches on the insides of doors that had been bolted closed, where you could hear them scratching and then see the scratch marks in the door. When you know nothing is in there.
Oh my
Yeah.
gosh.
Yeah, that's the one that always stayed with me was when I finally got that door open and realized that there were scratch marks and there was not a raccoon or something trapped inside there. That house was eerie. It had a lot of the phenomena that you don't really expect to see until it's facing you. But I've been at other haunted locations where you get things that you would expect out of a movie. Items thrown is very common. I had scissors thrown at me at one location. Just things that you wouldn't expect. Anything that is left out of the ordinary can suddenly become something eerie given the right location. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What about silly putty?
No. I mean, if you found it in the wrong spot, it could be really terrifying.
That's another one. I'd be curious if it can do some weird thing or haunted objects. Yeah, I mean, look, we've talked about dolls, we've talked about jewelry. Are there any other guy? I mean, marbles, stuff like that. Are there any other I suppose objects that are haunted that people might not expect.
Like everyday objects that are haunted that people don't expect. I think that there is a huge array of that that you just don't think about being possible. I've seen shoes that were haunted. It's just anything people become attached to emotionally, or anything that someone decides needs a ghost attached to it. If someone knows how to do a binding, you could pretty much haunt any object you wanted to. Not the most ethical thing, but it's doable.
Yeah. You know what? Let me ask you this. What is the difference between or right, I guess what is the spectrum of something going from haunted to cursed?
That is a fascinating way of looking at that. So, to my mind, a haunted object is something that has a sentient entity willingly hanging out with that object, no matter what it happens to be. Whereas a bound object, which would be getting closer to the curse section, is where someone takes it upon themselves to bind either a human entity or a non-human entity to an object for their own personal designs, be it power or getting a ghost to perform for you on demand, whatever it happens to be. But then when you truly get into cursed objects, that doesn't always have to be a spirit. It doesn't have to be anything sentient on an object to curse it. It can just be someone who is very talented at energy work or magic work that is able to lay that energy and find a way to have it drawn to that object to affect in whatever manner they want. So that is really sort of the extreme. And it's very, very rare to find someone who is talented enough or willing enough to do a truly cursed object without binding something to it to sort of feed it.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about even King Tut, people talk about it
Yes.
as a curse, but we've talked about it in the context of haunting. I mean, is it, I feel like perhaps haunted things have a cursed legacy, but wrongly so. I'm not sure. What do you think?
I think in most cases you're correct, but Egyptian tombs are one of the few things that we can say are legitimately cursed because the Egyptians left their curses written out for us on the tombs. We have the actual curse and what they were intended to do to people. It's a different sort of curse than you would find today to bind it to an object, but the goal of it was the exact same, to deter someone or to harm someone that did an action that they didn't like.
Boy, interesting, interesting. Yeah, I'm trying to think of more. Are there cursed toy stories that we haven't touched on?
Cursed toys. I can't think of a truly cursed toy. The closest thing you're going to come to that people will say would be Robert the Doll. That is the
Yeah.
one that people sort of go back and forth with. Was the doll cursed to cr give Robert that sort of fascination with it?
Yeah, that's interesting. Real life, I mean, a cursed toy. Yeah, that would be kind of messed up, I suppose. I don't know why would somebody have a thing against children that they just want to keep the kids cursed for the rest of their lives? I mean, I suppose I could imagine maybe a cursed Oculus Rift, maybe for adults that
Yeah,
need to, you know, I mean.
absolutely.
Yeah, very interesting. Okay, so look, let's speculate for a second. Robert the
Okay.
doll, kind of scary.
Yes.
Annabelle, scary. One is
Yes.
one is identified in traditional gender terms as I don't even know if you can say things are traditional anymore, but what used to be they're gendered. Annabelle is a girl, Robert's a boy. Who do you think's more haunted, Barbie or Ken?
I think in that case, if you're looking at degree of power behind the haunting, Annabelle all day long.
Wow. Okay. So if one of those items were to get haunted in the Barbie world, you think Barbie? I mean, I definitely, well, Barbie has a whole power. I mean, look how many outfits, look how many you know, I mean, a
Absolutely.
Malibu dream haunting. I could just see it. Maybe there's gonna be a
Absolutely.
whole line of movies about this. I don't know, but there definitely is a cultural significance, and I do think the idea that Annabelle was a Raggedy Ann also
Yes.
plays into perhaps the power of this.
Absolutely. I mean, look at Raggedy Ann and Andy and how they sort of arose as these comfort objects for children and then became these sort of symbols of older times. They're not modern toys. They are a little creepy when you look at them, just the normal ones. let alone this thing that has this twisted history of doing things that no doll should be able to do.
Yeah. You know, when looking into some of this, I was doing a little research here because I was curious. I look for cursed toys on the internet just to see if there are any things. And something that came up on this list are two things. Two paintings, The Hands That Resist Him and The Crying Boy. Apparently paintings can be haunted.
Paintings are haunted more often than you expect.
Or coming cursed. From
the museum world, yes. The idea with the crying boy was that he caused fires because that was the only thing that would survive all these fires. And it went so far that they actually did a big mass burning of those images because people were so convinced that the crying boy was causing fires in people's homes.
Oh my gosh, that's so crazy. I mean, it just caused fires. What?
Mm-hmm.
What
was the only thing that survived the fires.
What?
The fires would start in houses. There's even an Unsolved Mysteries episode about the crying boy pictures. And it's this very sort of exactly what you'd expect from the name. It's this sort of heart-wrenching picture of this little child that is just crying. And people started noticing that there were all these house fires happening. And when they would go in to sort of retrieve whatever one of their items might be left behind after this, everything around the crying boy picture would be burned, but the picture itself would still be there. And no one really knew what to make of it. And people have said, you know, it had to be made on some sort of fire-resistant material, or the string was breaking and letting it fall so it didn't actually burn. But this was not like a 3-week phenomenon. This went on for a period of time. So you're looking at something that would have had to have been continued throughout the entire time in order for it all to be functional, if it was a production issue with that picture. But yeah, that's still one that a lot of people will not hang for that very reason.
Interesting. Very interesting. You know, look, I kind of want to end on one more cursed object that I'm sure you can speak about. And I don't think I've ever had anybody talk about this on the show, but the Jewish wine cabinet. You know this one, don't you?
I do. So we are going with Dybbuk boxes.
Yes. Dybbuk boxes.
Yeah.
Yes. What is the situation with this?
The problem with Dybbuk boxes is there is not a lot of historical evidence that they were ever a real thing. It's sort of like a vampire hunting kit. Like, people talked about them. You might find a gaff of it here and there, but they weren't real. And I'm not saying that certain Dybbuk boxes in the public eye were made for the express purpose of fooling people, but that is a theory that's been bandied about. But again, I come back to the fact that there's not just one story at this point about them. Maybe that first one was just a story, but at what point do people focusing and fearing and going to museums to see these things end up with an actually haunted object when there was no haunting to begin with?
That's intriguing. Yeah. What is the idea? Is that it's connected to the Holocaust, right? Or
there is that, that is one of the stories, is that basically there is this inhuman entity that ate pain or consumed it somehow or the other. The story changes from telling to telling and from which source you're getting it from, but that it was bound to this Jewish wine cabinet as a way to try and move it where it needed to be and get it to sort of localize. And that when this item showed up in a thrift shop or a antique store, strange things started happening, heart attacks, and just a lot of bad things in that location that was eventually pinned on this box and this supposed inhuman entity that was manifesting in and around it.
Oh, intriguing stuff, and intriguing that, you know, of the stories here, this is what I love, that you're willing to discern between good evidence and bad evidence. You know, I mean,
I feel like when it comes to historic objects, that's where it gets very sort of cut and dry for me. If we have a history of it, great. If we don't, then we have to look at it as the modern phenomena that it is.
Yeah. Very intriguing. Very intriguing. Well, I mean, it seems like I'm seeing there are crowns out there. There are chairs that are possessed. I mean, really,
there's lots of death chairs.
Oh my, what's a death chair?
Chairs that when you sit in them, you immediately die. There's a ton of examples of that, and most of them end up placed on people's walls so you can no longer sit in them.
Oh my gosh. Ay, ay, ay. But then Barbie is still hanging around. I mean, she's immaculate. Yeah. We do not have a cursed Barbie story. Do you think it strengthens Barbie's legend as a perfect role model of perfectionist ideals of a time that nobody looks back fondly on anymore?
I think it allows you to place whatever you want on her because you have so much ability to make her whatever you want her to be. You don't have that sort of negativity that might get attached to them, especially for older style dolls. They're very sort of set in what they are. You can't change them. But Barbie is able to morph into whatever you want her to be at the moment, whatever you need her to be at the moment. So she's more malleable.
Yeah, you know, I wonder in the human psyche as well. You go to antique stores. I mean, I don't think there's an antique store on the planet where there is a doll from the old times that people don't think is haunted or possessed at some level. I mean,
absolutely.
Think it's partly pop culture, but at the same time, it could be. Well, I mean, even if you look at Robert the Doll and Robert the Doll's face, I mean, I could see that, you know, if we're going on the scale of all the way to deep fakes today, which mm-hmm. are this hyper realistic version of humans. And then we have these early versions going back to even voodoo and stuff like that.
Yes.
I mean, maybe that is just, I don't know, an example of spiritual anthropomorphizing, like looking at something that looks slightly weird and askew and then being like, well, because it doesn't really look human, there must be something inhuman about it. But I don't know. I mean, are they creepy because we made them creepy, or are they actually just creepy? I don't know.
I've always thought they were just creepy, but lately I've been wondering where it hits that sort of uncanny valley.
And yes.
You know, what in our little frog brains is telling us that there's something wrong and something to be afraid of.
Yes. Yes. It is strange. You cannot look at these dolls from antique shops and think they're cute. I mean, did nobody back then, did people not look normal back then? I mean, I don't understand why they all seem like they could be subjects of possession.
I wholeheartedly agree with you, but keep in mind technology of the time, they couldn't do any better. So the ones that they had were better than their mothers and they were better than their grandmothers. So it's this evolution and they just happen to be stuck at a very unfortunate time on that doll evolution scale.
Wow. Well, you know what? I think we've cracked it. Barbie kind of broke through.
Absolutely.
And that's why we don't really hear the hauntings. I mean, it's kind of a remarkable thing. She really was ahead of her
It
time. So look, I want to hear about these new projects. So you are doing, they're not out yet, but you've got two projects, Newblood.tv, which is all about the vampirism, which we love to allude to when you're on this show. That you first episode, you were like, I may be a vampire, I may not be. Second episode, I was like, you said you were a vampire, give me the deeds. And you're like, okay, fine, I'm a vampire.
Yeah, I'm fine.
But what is the de so, and now you're really embracing this.
Yeah,
What is
there's no
New Blood
reason not to at this
about?
point. So, newblood.tv is the landing site for both shows, and it is very sort of interactive, and there's a big community. So, Discords to talk about all of the weirdness in both. But really, we're looking at sort of modern vampirism and what it means in sort of a what happens if someone believes they might be a vampire, and what does that look like? And how does that affect your life? And just all the weird synchronicities that happen from there. So that one has a lot of sort of vampires attached to it. Michel Bélanger is one of the sort of forefathers of the vampire community, wrote the Psychic Vampire Codex, a sort of seminal work on the subject. And so they're involved in season one and season two. We have vampire Jack Townsend from TikTok joining us. So it's gonna be a wild ride.
That sounds very interesting. You know, in New Orleans, they have that they have that vampire lounge there. I never know. You
Oh
know,
yeah, they
wait.
do.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And the ghost tour, they said, hey, you go to that place, but be careful at that place. I mean, what is there something to fear about these vampires?
Most vampires, especially those that are energy vampires, are going to come at it from a very ethical place. If you're aware of it, you are not going to be just randomly draining everybody you come into contact with. So, most of the time, you're fine. You're in more danger from a newly awakened vampire that isn't aware of what they're doing yet than you are of a more seasoned vampire at that point.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, wait a minute. This is pretty funny. I'm on New Blood right now, looking at the
Yeah.
crew. And it says there's a photo of all of you. These weirdos have been working on two top secret projects. But then I look at this photo, I'm like, everybody here seems so nice seeming. This is like this could be a summer camp counselors, maybe the dude in the that's dressed in the leather jacket. I mean, that might be the weirdest thing here, but yeah, I mean, is this I almost wonder, are you might be weirdos, but maybe are you do you think vampirism, what's the rebrand here?
I don't know that there is a rebrand. I think vampirism is sort of a retaking of a term that was used sort of derogatorily, and it's just embracing a term that gives modern Western audiences an explanation for what those of us who live it are actually experiencing. There's not a better term for it. Do you turn into bats and do you do all of that? No, but it is still something that comes closest to explaining the way we interact with the world and the way that we end up having to sustain ourselves.
Yeah. Well, it's very cool. It's very cool. You're the one person I've ever heard who ever has received a master's and undergraduate degree in paranormal history. What in the
It
world?
takes some doing, but you can do it if you really want to. Your professors will not like you.
Oh my gosh. Someone should teach that. Wait, someone needs to build an entire distinguished university around this. I think it would be well, we might be moving in that direction. And then the other thing you have going on, of course, that I guess is also under the New Blood domain is Inhuman Beings. Now, what is that about?
So we take a group of weirdos and we go out to locations that have some paranormal activity. But what happens when we look at that from the perspective that we might not be looking at a human entity? what happens if? So it gets fun.
Oof, my gosh, you are putting yourself into these fascinating situations constantly. I'm always concerned, but when you come back on, you know what? It lets me know that you're still good. You've still got the abilities to set boundaries with the spirits, befriend them, kick them out if they're bothering you. I mean, do you for anybody out there that is dealing with a empathetic or maybe let me see, an attachment style to spiritual beings that isn't necessarily the healthiest. What is your advice?
I think the most important thing when dealing with any entity is knowing what is yours and making sure that you respect your space, energetically, physically, whatever it is that makes you solid and makes you grounded. Like, there's nothing wrong with living with a spirit if that's what you choose to do, but you need to make sure that you hold something, some sort of space just for yourself. I always personally like to suggest that people block off or will basically make the boundary be, this is my bedroom, you don't come inside. We can talk out there, but this is not the location. Or some people will give them a cue, like, I'm ready to talk to you or interact with you when I wear red lipstick or when I call out your name, whatever it happens to be. But just give them very simple, straightforward instructions that allow you your space to exist in this modern world, but also your space to interact with that other entity.
Wow, that is giving, yes, safe spaces. Yes,
Safe
this is
spaces.
very good. The philanthropist, the brilliant, the scholar, the brilliant scholar, the investigator, the daredevil of, I mean, you're more of a daredevil than I even realized. Yeah, the daredevil of actual devils, really. Stephanie
Some
Bingham.
days.
I appreciate you coming on. Look, there are a lot of weirdos in this new blood. Do you think you're one of the weirdest?
Am my own bar for normal, so I think I'm quite normal. Other people are weird.
Oh, love it. That is amazing, amazing way to put it. Stephanie Bingham, hey. Thank you so much. Everybody, check out newblood.tv. Google Stephanie Bingham to look up. Yeah, I mean, she's always going to these paranormal conferences and different things. So, it's a new thing all the time. But the newest, newblood.tv, and Inhuman Beings. Thank you so much again for coming on. This has been great.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Stephanie Bingham, she's always great. Thanks so much for coming on again. Three shows with her, and she's awesome. And you might be wondering, if we're hitting up the Barbie thing, does that mean we're gonna do Oppenheimer? And maybe it's the reverse. This is about benevolent objects turned evil. The atomic bomb is a malevolent object. Maybe, did you hear about that time we dropped something on Hiroshima and it just turned out to be a firework show? Yeah, that episode ain't happening. I want to thank Rodney McGilvery for the theme music. I want to thank Zero Boy for the pre-theme music. Make sure you follow this, like, subscribe, leave a few words if you enjoy the show. Love you all. Talk soon.